against Elro Steel Corporation.
May it please the court, my name is John Hamilton. I'm here from South
Hold on.
Bend.
You'll be recognized in a second.
Oh, I apologize.
Mr. Hamilton.
Thank you, Your Honor. John Hamilton from South Bend. With me at table is Andrea Halpin, also of South Bend. I've have 6 minutes to talk, and so let me just start off with the issue that I think Judge Miller has pointed out, and that is the question of whether the plaintiffs have not cited any authority where a group of plaintiffs succeeded in recovering on an ADA claim where they were effectively terminated en masse and replaced by other employees who were, on average, significantly younger than they. We think that that is the question in this case so far. The element of the prima facie McDonnell-Douglas case that has an age claimant required to show that he was treated worse than a younger, similarly situated employee. And the question this case presents is, if an employer manages to get rid of a whole bunch of people so that the plaintiffs are unable to point to a specific individual, does that mean that the McDonnell-Douglas indirect motive proof is unavailable to the plaintiff? I submit that that is absolutely wrong, especially here where the work was specified by the court and supported by the evidence that the work done at the plant in Niles was fungible. And these workers, substantially younger than the group I represent, were hired after the closure of the South Bend plant, after the union that was allegedly so difficult had no jurisdiction. And we submit that under these circumstances, the court is simply wrong. Now, if I may go on, there's a fundamental problem here, and that is I submit that Judge Miller was determining factual issues. He accepted Zantec's testimony when Zantec acknowledged that he had no personal knowledge of anything that he was talking about. And this goes to the question of the individuals and whether or not they had bad attitude or not. This case has two people at least where the defendant's own evidence shows that they had no problems with them at all, Zarosky and Howell. This is a case where a manager under 801D2D is available to the plaintiffs to show that he was happy with their work. He was satisfied. This is a case where the disciplinary records of these individuals was good. This is a case that deserves to be tried. I realize that members of this court have had real difficulties with the McDonnell-Douglas motive proof. I submit that
I must say I don't understand what this has to do with McDonnell-Douglas. What you're making is a disparate impact claim, and McDonnell-Douglas is not about disparate impact theories.
I agree with
the court's most recent and relevant decision, one might think, is Smith against the city of Jackson. How does your claim stack up under the approach adopted in Smith against Jackson?
I do not submit to this court that this is a disparate impact case. I submit to the court that this is a disparate treatment case. I don't think we win on a disparate impact analysis because we don't have the statistical evidence to save my client from a possible inappropriate waiver. I will urge the court that if the court thinks that this is a disparate impact case, we will submit it on that basis. But as far as I'm concerned, what we've got is a case where individuals – what about Andy Zarosky? Do we, because we made the mistake of filing an action for 12 people, leave Andy Zarosky adrift? If we looked at this case in terms of Andy Zarosky, would this be a disparate impact case? I submit not. I submit, yes, this is a McDonnell-Douglas case. This is a case where the court simply, in a sense, brought in Parkman and via Parkman a proposed disparate impact analysis when in fact this case is a multi-party individual claim age case which deserves to be treated appropriately under the Supreme Court's regimen in McDonnell Douglas. I will submit the case on that basis unless the court has any questions and reserve my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Hamilton.
Thank you.
Ms. Miller.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honor. Beth Miller on behalf of Alro Steel. I'm actually glad Mr. Hamilton has submitted that this is not a disparate impact case. I don't think then it's to be argued. They didn't plead disparate impact in the complaint. They didn't preserve that issue on appeal, and therefore it's not an issue. This is a disparate treatment case. The plaintiffs have no evidence of disparate treatment. They have no evidence that Alro Steel willfully and intentionally discriminated against any of these plaintiffs because of their age. And if you look at the ages of other people that they kept when they transferred the employees over to the Niles facility, it's quite clear that RO did not discriminate against these plaintiffs on the basis of their age. And again, I'm just going to repeat what the brief states, but of the 26 warehouse employees, five of them were under the age of 40, 21 were over the age of 40. Four of those five under the age of 40 were actually under the age of 25. None of those employees were brought over to the Niles facility. Of the office workers from South Bend, seven of the 15 workers were over the age of 40. Four were over the age of 40, one was over the age of 50, and two were equal to or over the age of 60. Now, that decision was made en masse. What happened a few months earlier was that the same decision makers of Alro Steel decided to offer transfers to all of the Benton Harbor warehousemen, which was another plant, that they decided that they would allow them to transfer over to the Niles facility. Of those Benton Harbor warehousemen, there were 16 in total. Nine were over the age of 40. Four were over the age of 40, and five were over the age of 50. So if you look at the numbers alone, there's the same decision makers who were involved in that process were involved in the process regarding South Bend. The lower court made a determination that the plaintiffs were not successful on two of the four prongs of the McDonnell Douglas analysis. One is whether the plaintiffs met the legitimate business expectations of Alro Steel and whether they were treated less favorably than similarly situated younger employees. The court did address, I believe, that the issue of whether they met the Alro's legitimate business expectations, and the court found that plaintiffs had no evidence that they did meet, in fact, Alro's legitimate business expectations. And if you look at the briefs, if you look at the evidence, the plaintiffs have no evidence that they actually met the employer's legitimate business expectations. Every plaintiff submitted an affidavit saying that they had no disciplinary or very little disciplinary problems. And Alro doesn't dispute that. But none of those affidavits or any of their evidence contests all of the evidence that Alro has with regard to the contentiousness of the union, the inefficiency and the non-productivity of the South Bend plant.
No one numbers. Took a copy of your brief and lodged it as a charge with the National Labor Relations Board.
No.
Because, of course, making an argument like this is a contentious union and therefore we're not doing X is almost a confession of a violation of the National Labor Relations Act. The union never filed a charge with the board?
And again, Your Honor, it's just evidence that it wasn't age that was the reason for the terminations of these warehouse workers.
Well, the Labor Board doesn't enforce the ADEA. But
no, they don't.
But somehow the argument I'm not violating the ADEA. It's a different statute I'm violating. Is perhaps sufficient in an ADEA case, but not the world's most compelling argument.
Well, again, I submit that the plaintiffs have no evidence that they met the employer's legitimate business expectations, with the exception of Brian Hoggett, a shift supervisor who was not in any way involved in any of the decision-making here. Does the court have any other questions in this regard?
Thank you very much, Ms. Miller.
You.
Anything further, Mr. Hamilton?
Just a couple of remarks.
I've been doing employment discrimination for a number of years, and I've got to say that it's difficult to see the kind of factual interpretation and evaluation of evidence that goes on in these cases. This argument that started off depicting the ages of different people at different times and different circumstances is fine. It's a jury argument. It's a matter of factual weighing of evidence. It should not be a function. It should not be a matter of this court drawing such inferences. And I think that the court has done it. And I submit that with the number of summary judgments that are routinely granted in employment discrimination cases, that the McDonnell-Douglas methodology, difficult though it is, problematic though it is a very effective sieve, that very few cases actually get to juries. And the approach of having the court weigh evidence, Judge Miller in this case has accepted Mr. Zontek's testimony as though it were gospel. Why? Is it because he's management? I submit this is just wrong. Now, finally, the NLRB. It does go to this case in that we believe that the timing of the argument that we didn't violate the ADA, we violated another statute, that came late in the game, the very end of the discovery process. Indeed, at the second half of the Cook deposition, all of a sudden, you see, this final justification for the decision being promoted. And Zontek limits it to the sole rationale. This case is littered with pretext, and I submit that the plaintiffs have established all of the elements of a McDonnell-Douglas case to get to the point of pretext, and the whole case should be submitted to a jury. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Our final